Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to be talking about celebrity pets. Now, I know so many of you out there just have your most favorite people in the world of celebrity, but have you ever wanted to know about any of their animals? Well, my guest today is Lai Ubarund, and we are going to be talking about these wonderful critters that have their own persona, and being an owner of Scottish Terriers, boy, and having been around animals for so much of my life, I can really tell you every single animal has its own personality. And we're going to be talking about them and the celebrity. Lai, I want to welcome you to the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
Now, Lai, where are you? You're in California, aren't you?
Oh, no, I'm in Houston, Texas.
Oh, my goodness. You're in Houston? Well, for some reason, I thought you were from California. Maybe that's because I met you in California a few months back.
I go there very often.
All right. Now, again, Lai, you are going to have to talk a little bit louder. I know you've got
a soft voice.
But I want you to be heard by my listeners. Now, I want to talk a little bit about you because you have a little bit of a unique background. Mm-hmm. You have been involved with communicating with animals for most of your life. Your grandmother encouraged you to develop your intuitive skills.
Yes.
And you have been interacting with people of different backgrounds in the area of mind skills for so many, many years. And you have a special connection with animals. Tell us how this developed and why it's become such an interest and a passion for you.
Well, you see, when I was little and I used to go out for walks with my grandmother, we used to talk to the animals, and she told me, you have to listen to them. They are like people, and they can talk to you. They have feelings. They hurt. They cry like we do, and they have unconditional love for people. So if you really listen to them, they will talk to you, and also they send you messages. You know, sometimes it's like a picture you see, and you know that's what they mean.
So why, here you are with your grandmother. She herself obviously was intuitive and had her own skills. What made you decide that this was going to be your life's work?
I don't really think I had a choice. I really believe that when you have that gift that you can help people, you can listen to spirits, you can speak to animals, et cetera, you just follow it, you know. It doesn't mean that you don't do other things as well, but it is a fact, it's a way of life.
Now, when you were involved in the development of your own intuitive skills, mm-hmm. how did you go about sharpening them? What were some of the steps? Because so many of the people that listen to my show on a daily basis, they themselves are aware of their intuitive persona, and they're always curious, how can I develop it? What kind of a tip would you give to people? What was it that you went through to refine your skills?
I would say listen to yourself and trust what you hear. That's the first one, you know, because most people hear something or feel something, and then they rethink it, they analyze it, they change everything, and then it's all gone. While if you trust yourself, that's what always happened to me. I started very young. Remember, I was like 3 years old. So for me, it's a way of life. I've always been like that, you know. But for people that start older, just trust it. And the worst thing that can happen is that you made a mistake.
I like what you said about working with it, because I know in my own experience, That is what you have to do. You need to be able to practice. You need to be able to put yourself into what I consider a somewhat safe environment. Many times it's family and friends, or participating in psychic fairs, however you want to do it. But you need to be able to practice. It's like learning how to play a piano.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just trust yourself, you know, and don't be afraid or anything like that, because sometimes we misunderstand it.
That's very true.
I have no sense of direction. I get lost all the time. That doesn't stop me from driving.
Good point. And I think that's very important for people to remember. Not only be aware of the fact that you're going to have to learn what works for you, but be open to changing your paradigms about your thinking. To communicate with animals, that is, I mean, I've talked with more than one animal communicator, and each one has their own style. I've met different psychics that demonstrate different skills and different talents, and all of it is appropriate. All of it is okay, because each and every one that is really skilled at what they do have developed their own persona.
Absolutely. You know, what works for A might not work for B, or the other way around, you know.
Correct. Now, how in the world did you get involved with celebrity pets? Did you go out and solicit them and say, excuse me, can I talk to your chihuahua like a Paris Hilton?
No, can I do this?
I mean, did they really let you do this? How did you get this all together? Because your book is Celebrity Pets, and there's the most adorable chihuahua with a crown on its head and a rhinestone necklace around its neck, and it's winking. It's as cute as it can be, and I love chihuahuas. So tell me, how in the world did you get involved with celebrity pets?
Well, you know, I got photos of the pets, and I can read the photos. I don't actually need to meet the pet in person.
Uh-huh. So you did distant readings on the animals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I did.
Now, with any of these animals, did you ever have a chance to meet any of the owners?
No, not yet, but I hope I will eventually.
Uh-huh. So this may be your passport, your book, to going in and interviewing some of the people that you have gotten insights about their animals.
I hope so. I hope so.
There we go. Now we know, folks, the modus operandi for her doing her book, which I think is a real good thing. Now, tell us, when you are doing this communication with animals, and we'll be talking about Paris Hilton and Tinkerbell, and we'll talk about one of the hunks of hunks that everybody,
most people
today, yeah. We're
That's
not
a lovely one.
Game yet, but we'll get to him. Anyway, we want to talk about how, first of all, before we get into some of these wonderful characters, what is it that you do when you prepare to do a communication as an animal communicator? Now, you were working with photographs.
Yeah.
How do you prepare yourself for that? Do you just sit and look at the photo? What do you do? What goes on?
Well, to start with, I have to be in my office normally. When I wrote the book, you know, I was very quiet. I meditated beforehand. I meditate every single day. And then I would just look at the photo and touch it and get whatever I got. I would just jot it down. And then, I mean, not worrying, you know, about what they were saying. And then I would go and type it on the computer.
So you were taking one photo at a time. Excuse me, I talked over you. What?
Oh, I'm so sorry. And sometimes, you know, later on I would get something else from the pet and I would just add it up to the text, you know. That's as easy as that.
So how long did it take you to put together this book?
You're not going to believe this. 5 weeks.
5 weeks?
5 weeks.
You're a quick operation.
I had the publishers, you know, asking for it every single day, and I had a deadline.
Uh-huh, there we go. So this is one of the reasons that she decided to do it the way that she did it. Because if she had set up an interview or tried to set up one with each and every animal, then it probably would have taken you a couple of years or more to get it done.
Absolutely, but you see, we didn't have time. There were deadlines, there were meetings, and I had to do it.
All right, so We've got a few of the basics, and for those of you that are interested in finding out more about pet communication, I'll be able to give you some information about Lai's telephone, not telephone, but her website, so you can go there. Now, let's start off with your very first animal that you decided to focus on, and I think this is just so much fun. Paris Hilton and Tinkerbell. And Tinkerbell is just adorable.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about Tinkerbell and why you decided to focus on her. Of course, Paris Hilton, I mean, she's in the news all the time, so that's a good reason to focus on an animal, but especially her pet. But
well,
what happened with Tinkerbell?
Well, what happens with Tinkerbell is that she's like all the other animals. They love their owners unconditionally. And I think that Tinkerbell sees a side of Paris Hilton that nobody else does. You know, it's the same as Britney Spears. Also, her dogs see a side of Britney Spears that nobody else does, you know. So that, and also, I feel that Paris Hilton, people say that she's not intelligent, but she is. She's extremely intelligent, and she's a very good businesswoman.
Well, now, with Tinkerbell, what were some of the things that she brought up that were very insightful about Paris Hilton from your perspective?
Well, from my point of view, it's that the main thing is that people think that Paris Hilton is a spoiled little brat and she's not intelligent at all. And that was the main thing that Tinkerbell said. Paris Hilton is very smart, a very intelligent woman. That she needs to be a bit more mature, yes, she does. That we all agreed on.
All right, now let's talk about one man that so many women just absolutely drool over, and that man is George Clooney.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Ah, yes, 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 yes. Now, what I loved about George Clooney is that he has a pet pig, not a dog, not a cat, not a turtle, but a pig. And pigs are considered one of the most intelligent animals on this planet anyway.
Absolutely.
So tell us about George Clooney and this wonderful character, Max, this wonderfully intelligent pig.
They have a love-hate relationship, you know. And he's dead, you know, the pig died. He actually told me he was going to die. I didn't want to hide it down because that would be cruel, so I just hope that I won't be here forever taking care of him. But they loved each other, they respected each other, and they butt heads a lot, you know. But that they were excellent friends, yes, they were. And that the pig admired George Clooney tremendously, yes. And he was very happy he stayed with George Clooney and didn't go with his ex-girlfriend.
Uh-huh. So we've got a little bit of an insight regarding George Clooney. And for those of you, those ladies that might be interested in it, you'll have to get the book, Celebrity Pets, to find out more. Because I'm not going to tell you anymore. Now, you brought up Britney Spears. And she has one of these spunky little dogs, which I think is very appropriate for her. What type of a dog is it?
She has a Chihuahua also. She has several dogs, you know, several pets, but the pets didn't like her ex-husband.
Oh.
None of them liked her ex-husband, you know, they liked her better. And I think they missed the children. The dogs missed the children, you know. They loved the children very much. But they didn't like her ex-husband. So I don't know how that will go now. I haven't spoken to the pets for a while. Perhaps I should do that one of these days.
Now, one of the teenagers, that you have as a client said this. You need to know about these animals that Britney Spears had, and you didn't even know that she had animals.
No, I didn't. You know, I hate to say this, but I watch very little television. And honestly, Britney Spears, you know, she's more for teenagers and all that, you know. So I don't know too much about that because it took me some time to find out who they were. But when that thing came out on the book, and that I really loved, it was Shirley MacLaine.
Oh, now, why did you like that so much?
Oh, I love Shirley MacLaine. I think she's a very spiritual woman. She knows what she's doing. She's very intelligent, an excellent actress, and I admire her relationship with her dog, and that she came out and she said the dog talked to her and the dog held the book and all that, and people thought she was crazy, but it's true. The dog helped her hide the book because she's extremely psychic.
Mm-hmm.
So
and with her and her involvement in the area of, in fact, she made one of the greatest strides forward, I think, publicly by acknowledging that this was her journey, and that's what she was sharing every time she wrote a book, was another aspect of her own personal journey.
Absolutely.
And that made it very special. Let's talk about a woman that is loved, has achieved a great deal of notoriety, and has a dog called Pawpaw. Who is that special lady?
Martha Stewart.
Martha Stewart. Why did you focus on Pawpaw, which, by the way, her chows are just absolutely gorgeous dogs.
Exactly for that, because I like the dog.
Oh, those chows are phenomenal.
They are phenomenal, and it also shows the human side, because a lot of people, she has this image of being cold, and all after all that happened to her. But she is, you know, I feel in the end she's a bit shy. That's what the dogs feel. She's a little bit shy, and she's a bit afraid, you know, of criticism. And she doesn't know very well how to communicate with people. She gets so carried away with what she's doing. And in the end, she changed the image of the housewife by making, you know, things interesting, you know, like cooking and decorating and all kinds of things that she did. So I think she's a great person.
Now, what impressed you a great deal about Pawpaw?
That he was so naive. He was so naive, so open, and almost felt guilty for things that had happened. And but also was very happy when things, and very proud of the good things, you know. And he almost felt as he should have protected Martha Stewart a bit more. But I don't think he could have done anything.
I doubt if he could have done anything.
No, he couldn't. But, you know, animals, they feel it.
Yes, they do.
You have animals yourself, so you know how they are.
Yes, they are. And they're very, very intelligent. I think it's delightful that in our world today that we are more comfortable talking about our animals. There was a time, and there may still be a lot of people that feel this way, but I don't think so. People, when you talk about your animals, you feel they're like your children in your family. And there are some people that say, oh, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But the truth is, I have found, and this is my awareness, that animals reflect a great deal about their owners.
Oh, yes.
If you have animals that are extremely agitated, then you've got to read in to a great deal of what's going on in the household. There could be someone who's very ill. There could be an emotional disorder. There could be agitation. There could be abuse in the household. There could be all kinds of things going on.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
And
you
if the animals are open and warm and friendly, then you've got a pretty good idea of what kind of a home.
Absolutely. And also another thing, if you really think about it, people are complaining about pit bulls and Rottweilers and all that. You know, we had a Rottweiler. Trust me, that dog kissed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He was the biggest kisser ever. He wasn't a watchdog at all because he was raised, you know, with so much love and so much fun with kids and all that stuff that he would never even dream of attacking anybody. And
correct.
You have others that attack wives. It's the owners that make them like that.
I think that's a very, very good point, Lai, because there are so many dogs. I can remember when I was a little girl that there was some boxer that had attacked a child. And so there was this big media hype that all boxers were bad, that you just had to be aware if you had a boxer, it was going to go after your children. It was going to be this vicious animal. Well, that period passed, and boxers are some of the most magnificent pets anybody can ever own. The bull terriers. And I've known a number of people that have had terriers, bull terriers, and they have not been at all the negative animal. But if they are of a temperament to be negative, and the owners prime them to be that way, and that goes for any breed.
Absolutely.
Then they will do what they are primed for.
Absolutely. And also another thing, I'm sorry, is that there are dogs, for example, that are more suitable for families with children, and there are dogs that are more suitable for grown-ups only.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very true. And that's the same, that is really with any animal that you take on as a pet.
Absolutely.
If you're going to have a pet, you need to think about that temperament. And sometimes it pays, I think, to do your homework. Because you need to find out. If you're not a person that likes avid exercise, for heaven's sake, you don't want to get an animal that's going to require you're going out and playing 3 hours a day with it.
Oh, yeah. You are absolutely right, and that's what people don't seem to understand. And I have a lot of clients that have children, for example, and I tell them, normally, you know, I want this little dog. I say, no, for families with children, get a big dog. Because children are children, you know,
mm-hmm.
and small dogs get afraid of getting hurt.
Not only that, but they're not, if they're of the terrier breed, they're not going to put up with any nonsense. They're going to say,
agree.
No way, kid. I'm down here on this ground, and you better pay attention. So,
yeah,
I mean, it does depend on the breed. And you go into your book, you've got Ivana Trump, who is a wonderful woman. You also talked about Audrey Hepburn and Mr. Famous, but let's talk about Ivana. This is a woman. She and Donald Trump have always been in the headlines at one time or another. They were quite a powerful couple when they were together. She had two dogs, Choppy and Dodo. What a name to give a dog. So tell us about Choppy and Dodo.
Oh, my God. They were so difficult to hit because they lied and they kept switching, and I never knew who was talking. You know, they were really playing tricks on me. And they thought that was a... They had a wonderful time. You know, they were difficult to hit for. But I really believe that she's a very intelligent woman and that she did the best she could. You know, and she really loves her dogs. You know, she absolutely loves her dogs. And she takes them everywhere wherever she can take them. You know, so that's a wonderful thing.
And she's also involved with animal rescue.
She is involved in animal rescue, and I think that's great that she does as well. But a lot of the stars or those people are involved in animal rescue, you know, which I think it's great. There is a wonderful kennel rescue center in L.A., for example, and most of the people volunteering there, they are stars.
Wow, maybe you could go there and meet a few and say, hey, would you mind if I interview your dog?
Absolutely, they asked me to go there.
What a great way to start meeting people and let them know that their dog is going to be written up in your next book.
Oh, yeah.
Dog, cat, or birds, or whatever.
I think so. But if you go back to the boxes, my advice for people with boxes is if they have a beautiful garden, they might not want the boxer. I had a boxer, and I tell you, he was the biggest digger ever. He took everything out. He made holes everywhere. But besides that, he was perfect, you know.
Well, your book is a lot of fun. Your
Thank
stories
you.
About these different animals are a lot of fun. You even have a story about Bill Clinton and his dog Buddy.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And you talk about all kinds of animals that are involved in film work, which I thought was a hoot because there are so many of them we get to know, you know,
yes,
like Lassie.
It's very
and,
hard for them, you know.
Oh, yes. There's just so much information here that I think people just, it's just a wonderfully entertaining book.
Thank you.
And what is your website like?
It's www.laiuberut, L-A-I U like umbrella, B like boy, E like Hobbit, U like umbrella, D like David.com. But even if they Google me and the lie, they will end up there because I'm on plenty of websites.
Wonderful. Well, if you want an entertaining book, and if you're thinking about a gift that for a person that has everything, and if they're an animal lover, Celebrity Pets, tell all, then you're going to really enjoy Laya Uberlin's book. It will be something that will be a conversation piece, if nothing else. She's been involved with animal communication for quite a bit of time. She's a fun lady. You can go to her website, laiuberlund.com, and that's LaiuBerlund. That's LaiuBerlund.com. Lai, before we close out our chat for today, what would you like to leave in the way of a thought for my listeners?
You mean about pets or
yes.
about themselves?
Pet communication.
Pardon? Pet communication?
Mm-hmm.
Just listen to your pet, you know, and don't think that you are crazy when you feel, for example, the cat or the dog, you know, is telling you, hit the keys, for example. Listen to it. There is a reason. They have a lot of intuition, and they're trying to protect you. And if you think the cat told you that it's going to rain today and everybody told you it's going to be sunshine, most probably the cat is right.
So be willing to be open and receptive.
Yeah, and listen, you know, and just listen to them. That's the best thing, is to listen to the animals. And whatever crosses your mind, or if you see pictures, sometimes you see pictures like, you know, a photo or so, that's true. You know, the pet is sending you a thought or an image or a picture or an idea.
Well, telepathy works on multiple levels. And if you ever study history, you'll find that in many, many cultures that were called primitive, communication with animals, with nature, was a natural part of their life. Lai Uberlund, thank you so much for being my guest today. And for those of you who are listening, go to her website. All of you gals and guys out there are savvy. To Lai, L-A-I, Uberlund, UBBERUD.com. And you will be able to find out more about this lovely lady and her wonderful work. Lai, thank you again for being my guest.
Thank you so much for asking me, Donna. And I hope to see you in San Francisco.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed, and I'm sure we'll meet again.
This is
Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't you go anywhere now. We've got more good things to share with you. Donna Sebo here. Don't forget, Celebrity Pets will be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, so if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to do that. Give me a buzz at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, toll free 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. If you've never listened to the show before, I want to say thank you for tuning in today. Be aware if you want to call in, when you do call in to any one of those numbers that I've mentioned, all we need from you is your first name or your initial. And then I'll tell you what I perceive. And after that, you can ask me a question about anything that you would like to have some insight on. And what I like people to understand is that I'm an information resource. Sometimes people will say, well, gee, Donna, what's your percentage of accuracy? I'll tell you, quite frankly, I haven't a clue. And I have literally talked to tens of thousands of people through the years. I don't keep score. That's not how I work. I have a resource that enables you to have some assistance, some insight, some perspective. And that is my skill. I think it is really sad when people want to have something so ironclad that it's an absolute, and they sit around then and wait for it. When I became involved in this work, in the work of mind, I became involved because I felt if I used my skills to empower people to know that they could do something with their lives, that there are options to work with, then that would make a difference. I am not a fortune teller, so don't bother calling me if you want a fortune teller. If you want perspective and you want insights, I'll be delighted to provide them. That gives you the personal power of individual choice. And that is how I work. So again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. I want to share something with you. There's always little stories that come my way and little items. And this one is from Don Lee. This is something that I came across that I just thought was wonderful. He's in Missouri. He said his wife left the car unattended for only a minute, but it was long enough for their two-year-old to climb in, throw the car into reverse, and crash into a lamppost. Oh, a parent's worst nightmare. Now, he's fine. But regrettably, the car wasn't, and Don had a real tough time explaining to his insurance company's adjuster what happened and who was behind the wheel when this occurred. Well, you can just imagine how the adjuster felt when he was listening to this story, and the adjuster responded to him after pausing quietly to take in all of the details. He looked at Don and he said, "Do you let him drive often?" You know, you have to give insurance adjusters credit. They must hear every story in the book. But kids have done things like this. It is amazing what kids and animals can do to a vehicle, to a house. And some of these programs on animals, you know, we started off the show talking about celebrity pets, but some of these shows on animals that you watch, the videos that people take, they're hysterical because we don't imagine that animals or critters would do what they do. And I am always surprised at how people do not think animals have any kind of intelligence. In fact, a friend once said to me, I'll never forget this, I was in a vehicle with them. We were going to a particular meeting. And we were talking, my husband and I were talking about our Scotties and various animals that we've come to know over the years. And I, of course, have had a number of very special experiences with animals. And I remember this person saying, oh, animals are dumb. They don't know anything. They don't have any insights. They don't know. This is silly. And I said, that is not true. Well, this individual has never owned a dog. I have to share something with you. Now, this was 2 years ago when this happened with this friend of ours. And this gentleman was very adamant that animals just were literally nothings. Well, he has gotten married, and he has a wife who has this adorable, adorable dog. Guess who has become the best pal to that dog.
Mm-hmm.
You got it right. The guy that said that animals don't know anything, it has totally changed his life, and I love it. Often we have particular thought patterns or attitudes because maybe we've been indoctrinated with that, or we've had nothing in our experience that shows us any different perspective. Just like our friend. Now, we didn't stop keeping him as a friend. He's a wonderful guy. But his perspective changed when he had real life experiences. And it's opened up a whole new world for him, which he didn't think existed, but it does. And that's the way it is with so much of life. We open ourselves up because of experiences. You can read things in books, but until you actually live it or are associated with something that brings you into the aha of a moment, how are you going to understand it? Don't you just love it when people will intellectualize with you? You know, being a psychic and being involved in the world of mind for so many years, for most of my life, I just really have a great time when people say, you know, I'm a skeptic. I said, congratulations, that's wonderful. I'm so glad. Now, what's your question? It is so much fun because there is a side of that individual that is not wanting to acknowledge that there's something beyond what they've experienced. And in a way, it's scary. Because for you to change a paradigm, for you to change a belief system, means that you have to acknowledge that something is right and you might be wrong. Or maybe you were misinformed and you're going to have to expand yourself into something bigger. You know what happens no matter what it is, whether it's animals, the psychic self, learning a skill, understanding a business, it is the same thing all across the board. When you are willing to be open and you're willing to be receptive and you're not afraid to examine and to explore and to keep an open mind, and you are discriminating too, you just don't want to be a garbage can for anything and everything that comes along, but you want to be open and you want to be receptive and you really want to be there so that you can say, what is this? Am I missing something? And if I am missing something, is it valuable to me? Will it serve my purposes? Many times people close down on their thinking because they are afraid that what they have, because it may no longer be true, a belief system, for example, they are afraid that if they let go of that belief, they have failed. That's not true. It's not unlike an old pair of tennis shoes. There comes a time when you don't want to wear the stinky old things, one, because they look ugly, two, because your feet are hurting like crazy, and three, you know you need to buy a new pair because that's what is the right thing to do. So you go and you throw them out. Now, if you really are totally attached to those particular pairs of shoes, you know, have them gilded if you want. But why? It is merely something you make it okay to let it go and to move on. And sometimes beliefs and attitudes and perceptions are like that. There's a time for them in our lives, and then there's a time to make them go away, to respect them, honor them for whatever purpose, good, bad, or indifferent they serve, and to allow for a bigger awareness to evolve in your life. It is so wonderful. And it doesn't mean that it's going to come always in a joyful experience. Many times the understanding and the learning comes through pain and suffering. Because often, and I can raise my hand and acknowledge this, we don't learn by nice situations. Usually the universe has to hit us in the head with a 2x4. Sometimes it's been a couple of 2x4s in my own personal life experience because I was in a state of denial. Has ever, ever happened to you? Well, it's happened to me. And it's okay because I had to grow, I had to learn. It's with all of us. So don't be upset when life brings you what you think is a bunch of trash, dumping it on your front porch. All you have to do is say, can I use this trash? If I really can't use it, then I'm going to clean it up and out and get rid of it. If there is a diamond in there somewhere or a piece of gold, I'll extract that and I'll throw the rest away. Life is for the living. Life is for learning. Life is to be experienced. There is no safety zone that exists. There's always going to be those learning curves. And I would say yahoo to all of that. Because when you have it, when you have those learning curves, that means that your world is getting bigger and expanding and you can perceive it. Now you have a choice. You can expand it in a positive if you want or in a negative. But you have to remember, you're the one that has the power to do it. Don't ever forget that. No one has the right to have dominion over your mind and your attitudes but yourself. The road to being a true individual is always a hard one because we have all been indoctrinated that it's somebody else's fault or somebody else's doing. We always want to put it someplace else, the responsibility for our choices. No. You must remember, you're the one making the choices. You're the one making the decisions. Respect yourself. Appreciate that. And if you've made a lousy one, say, okay, that one stank. Out it goes. Or it stinks, whatever the proper English would be. It isn't working. I don't need this in my space anymore. Chunk it, just like that old pair of tennis shoes. You don't need to have it anymore. Move on. This is Donna Sebo. If you'd like to give me a call me at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 and also 530-876-3222. Now, before we go to break, I want to let you know what's going to be happening tomorrow. I am so excited about this. Ron Clancy is one of my favorite people, and he's been on my program ever since I found out about him about 4 years ago because he came out with this wonderful Millennium Christmas Music Collection. And that's what we're going to be airing tomorrow. We're going to be putting this on the air. It's a marvelous way to get into the holiday mood. Ron has got a fabulous story. He is a wonderful man, and his material is just magical. And a lot of the classics will play. You'll hear them. You'll know them. You'll recognize them. But there are stories behind every piece of music and some wonderful story about the history, stories about the history of music. So Ron Clancy is going to be with me tomorrow. We're going to have glorious Christmas music for the programming tomorrow. And then on Friday, a wonderful man, Russell Targ, he also is a repeat guest. Russell Targ has been involved with remote viewing. This man has worked with the CIA, all kinds of organizations trying to work with the understanding of the mind and how one can develop skills. So this is all what's coming up this week, and you have a chance to be able to listen to all of it. And don't forget about our archives, because if you miss a show, hey, you can pick it up later. When you're working on whatever, you can listen to the Donna Sebo Show in the background. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back in just a moment, and if you want to give me a buzz, do so. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss, book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Because I wanted to focus on animals this afternoon, you know, we were talking earlier about the celebrity pets, animal communicators. I wanted to address another side relative to animals. And again, if you want to give me a call, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. I have long been familiar, as I'm sure many of you who are listening to this show are, with animal rescue teams. I've known some people that have participated in the training of these wonderful animals that are actively on call 24 hours a day to be able to go out and respond to an emergency. And I wanted to share with you this wonderful story about Gandalf and the search for the lost boy. When this came to my attention, and we're going to be talking about Misha Marshall. She is in South Carolina, and this is a passion that Misha has had, and that is working with animals. She has had a love of them as far back as she could remember. But this was a fabulous, fabulous story, and I really think it's worth mentioning because it empowers us to know that animals can make such a difference. Their sense of smell is substantially greater than ours. Their hearing, their intuitive perceptiveness, their ability to be able to do what we often cannot do. And I think this story is so very special. Now, we're going to be going to the time frame of March 20th, which is a very special day, because that was the day that Misha left to take her dog to a very special location to find a 12-year-old boy whose name was Michael Aubery. Now, Michael had vanished from his troop's campsite in Doten Park, and that's 7,000 rough acres in the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina. And I've been in those mountains, and to find anything there to me would be absolutely a miracle. And that's what this story really is all about. Now, Misha had Gandalf, her 2-year-old Shiloh Shepherd, and she had been working with Gandalf for, you know, a year so that she could be prepared for an emergency. Well, this was a call that she received. It was their first on-site job. So Gandalf had gone through all the training, and now she was going to have to go out into an environment totally foreign to her to find 12-year-old Michael. A little bit of background on Gandalf. She got him when he was just a puppy, and she said he looked more like a bear cub than a puppy. But she said he was so special. She's just got this knack of being able to read animals, and she said, this dog is so special, I'm going to name him Gandalf, and that is the name of the wizard, if you'll remember, in The Lord of the Rings. And she said, he's got magic. I just know he's got it. So she went about training him for a year. Now, this Doten Park is located in a bowl on the side of a mountain. And this area is very, very heavily vegetated. It's extremely treacherous. They have steep ridges there that rise about 2,400 feet. There are rock overhangs, all kinds of slippery moss, various kinds of plants. It's very, very dangerous. You just don't know where you're going to put your foot and if it's going to be a safe place to put it. So it's not a forgiving terrain at all. It's very, very treacherous. Now, the rangers of the park, knowing this area as well as they do, when the boy was discovered missing, the first thing they did was call in the park and rescue team. They knew they had to do this because the dogs were going to be the ones that would be able to accomplish what they otherwise knew they could not. They found on their first day that there were some potato chips. They found that they were west of Michael's campsite along a fire road that was going very, very deep into the park. They found footprints on another path, and then they found them still a quarter mile away from the camp. However, they came across a creek. When they came to the creek, they couldn't find anything after that. Then someone happened to find the lid of a tin mess kit, which was 100 yards upstream from where the footprints disappeared. So these people really do their work. They're out there. They're exploring. They keep in touch with each other. The animals are out there searching. Well, they knew some facts about Michael. They knew that he was wearing an insulated red coat. He had on very good boots. However, they said they were getting soaked. So they knew if Michael was out in this environment, being 12 years old, here they are adults, he's going to be going through even more. Now, they tried everything. They checked out log jams on creeks. They were rappelling down cliffs to see if maybe the young boy had fallen somewhere. The divers were dragging an area of dam at an abandoned fish hatchery. This was going on for 4 days. There were 566 trained rescuers that were searching the woods. Just hold that image in your mind. 566 rescuers. In come Misha and Gandalf. 4 days later, the people that had been there before with their dogs said, "This is such a bad area. You're on your hands and knees most of the time. Our dogs have not been able to find a trail of scent. A dog that's brought in at this time would have to pick up the missing boy's scent in the air." They said, "We wish you luck. We have not had any." Now, they did find an unwashed T-shirt that had come out of Michael's backpack. They had not allowed anybody to touch it. In fact, they handled it with their gloves and carefully cut it up into smaller pieces, and they sealed those pieces into plastic bags. Now, at the morning that Misha came in, all the searchers, including her, were briefed about Michael. Misha looked at the boy's picture. She said she wanted to get the image of him in her mind so strongly, and then she wanted Gandalf to lock in on the scent. They went out. So they had estimated they had covered about 70 acres, 1% of the park area. They would have to have 8 hours to be able to sweep through the section they wanted to go through. They knew Michael had scouting skills. He had read books about how to survive in the woods, but they weren't certain that he had survived it. Now, Misha was very determined. She said to herself, "Michael is still alive," and she told Gandalf, "We've got to find him." She took out one of the shreds of Michael's shirt, let Gandalf sniff it, and the dog started up the trail that was in front of them, and Misha and some associates followed. Now, he kept going from side to side, and her associate was navigating with a map and a GPS device. And after a while, they were comparing information. They had gone about 5,900 feet, and it had put them right about the top of the assigned area that they were delegated to survey. But they decided, before they turned back, they were going to go up a little bit higher. They went another 15 minutes, and they chose a spot that was about 200 yards away from where they were, crossing and recrossing an area called Basin Creek. All of a sudden, something was happening with Gandalf. His head went up. She said she couldn't see anything, but she noticed his body language. She said her dog was 30 years ahead of her, working the bank of the stream, and it followed the stream beneath the wall, and he lifted his head again. She said, "He's got something." They followed him. She said 50 yards up on a ledge in a direct line ahead of her dog was Michael. His vivid red jacket was visible, and he was a little dazed. He was fatigued, and he was hungry. They'd found Michael. And she was concerned. She didn't want the boy to be afraid. But Michael was so happy they'd found him, obviously. The helicopter came in, took him off. Michael had learned from his previous training how to survive. Because of surviving, he won a Wilderness Survival Merit Badge. But Gandalf found the Boy Scout. The dog that had a sense that was far greater than anybody around it. It's a fabulous story. I had to share it with you today. Well, my goodness, we've run out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever feel that there's not something wonderful out there for you in the world. It is. And you know what? You've got the magic to make it come alive. That's what's going to be given to you today at some time. Maybe tomorrow. Be ready for it. Talk to you tomorrow. Glorious Christmas music. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.